When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past and there is no future and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Welcome to the ThinkSpace podcast with myself, John Staskowski and Danny Massaro, where we discuss human nature and the practical application of philosophy. To find out more about our cohort course and membership community, please head over to www.thinkspace.academy. We hope you enjoy this episode.
This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.
Okay, so this week we're going to be exploring the philosophical movement of pragmatism. We're going to focus this around the classic American pragmatists who were Charles Sanders Peirce, William James and John Dewey. So we're going to delve into what pragmatism is and why it might be a really useful approach to take to modern life. We're going to explore things like the nature of truth, a pragmatic education, and we'll look at the relationship between pragmatism and some of the more traditional philosophical areas of thought, really, especially European philosophy. And we'll also delve into some of the perhaps criticisms and negatives of pragmatism. So we're going to start off with Danny just diving straight into why he thought this was a really useful topic for us to cover and explore in a podcast.
Right, okay, pragmatism. Well, really, I wanted to do something on this because I came across pragmatism as the word, like most of us do. Oh, that guy's pragmatic. And, you know, I suppose over my teaching career and coaching, you know, it's like, though Danny's a very pragmatic guy and we're having a bit more confidence in philosophy. I thought, well, I'll look at the philosophy of what pragmatism is and where it came from and so on. It's not as simple. Pragmatism, I found out, wasn't as simple as what you might call practicalism, which is just what's the bottom line cash value of your ideas. So it's, you know, some people have said that pragmatism is just the philosophy of so what, that at the end of the day, that, you know, do I believe in God? Does God exist? For example, might be a question, does God exist? And someone might go, so what, who cares? Because I don't care if he actually truthfully, you know, that the truth is that there is a God, there isn't a God, or I'm not bothered. The only thing that's important is how the notion of God affects you in your life. So a pragmatist would answer, does God exist? It would be, it doesn't really, it's the wrong question. It's how does God, the notion of God, make you feel, and how does it affect your life? What's the bottom line? So what's the cash value that you actually get out of either believing God exists or God doesn't exist, or you're not bothered about God? So if you go to some people's houses and they really believe in God and it's all around and they live by that creed, to them, it clearly, God is clearly in the room in a way, in their life. So to them, the truth is God does exist. Whereas to someone who's atheist and has never even considered it and doesn't need God or hasn't even mentioned it, you know, or it's like, well, you know, actual scientifically, there's been no proof of it. So it does, you know, this thing that you're talking about called God does not exist to me. And it's like, okay, so what? And he said, well, that makes my life feel better because I'm right. And I hate people who believe in false truths like God. And you say, well, okay, good. Well, pragmatically, well done. That serves you well. It makes you feel good. So pragmatism is all about that, and it's about getting to the bottom of, like, well, what's the final effect? It's not about finding the actual truth that's out there in the world, like lots of philosophers have and have debated, like lots of why this and what's that. It's more like, so what? So it can be called the sort of the philosophy of the open-mindedness. As it's what it's how it at the end of the day affects you.
What I liked about it initially when we first started looking at this a few weeks ago and talking about it, these boys, so like William James, John Dewey, and before them it was Charles Sanders Peirce, wasn't it, as the main guys. What I liked about it was at the time, so this is what, late 19th century, early 20th century, like back end of the 1800s into the 1900s, they were kind of rebelling a bit against philosophy, weren't they? Of like this really abstract kind of conceptual thinking of like what might be called like traditional philosophy. And it was like, just it's just navel gazing. It doesn't really have a point in the real world. It's just like, you know, philosophy for the sake of it. And I recognize that in us, we're trying to, certainly the stuff we've been doing with ThinkSpace, we keep talking about practical philosophy, don't we? So we want it to be practical. We don't just want it to be about, oh, well, you know, what is the meaning of this spoon? You know, materially, does it exist and all that stuff?
Yeah,
you can easily go down those paths of really abstract thinking that doesn't really lead anywhere. And I think for me, the pragmatists were like, right, whatever, but what works in the real world? What's going to help you do this job better or feel better about this? And it's like, let's get to the core of the matter practically, what works rather than like the theory of what might work.
Yeah.
So I really like that aspect of it, which for us in the stuff that we do, you know, like in and around sport and education and working with people, it resonates, doesn't it?
The word originates practice and action. That's the original sort of definition. You know, it's coming from those two words. And it's the idea that James said was, it's not necessarily the roots of the idea that matter, it's the fruits.
Exactly.
And as I said earlier, it's not full-on practicalism like some, I don't know, some stubborn farmer who says, this has always worked this way and I'll always do my fields like this and I'm a practical person and I'm not into thinking at all. What pragmatism is, it still does involve thought, because thinking your way through a situation, an individual thinking the way through how they might use a new idea. So if you're a sports person and you're told to go to the gym and you're told to, you know, do a technique and read a book and practice and so on, you can't just blindly follow that in action as if, well, I'm doing it practically and find out whether it works or it doesn't. You've got to also join in and think your way through it for you in your situation. So pragmatism isn't necessarily about finding a universal method that's pragmatic for everybody. You can't take yourself or the people around you out of it. John Dewey was a bit more about the social side of it, that you have to always consider everybody around you, whereas William James and Charles Peirce was a bit more individualistic, that as long as it works for you, don't worry about it, makes you feel good and so on, or, you know, it has a practical effect for you. Dewey was more annoyed because ultimately that will fail if you're just thinking of you, because you actually have to, you are part of a nest, you are part of a whole. So you have to also pragmatically think about, yeah, that might work for you doing that with your house. You know, you stop the rain coming in, but you're going to flood all the other houses on your street with that method. And then you're going to get, you know, killed for it. So it isn't as simple as what works for me, that's all that matters. You're part of a larger system. I also think that pragmatism takes into account the instant effect of something, and you have to consider the medium term and the long term effect of something. So that a pragmatism might be, oh my God, I just did a lot of plyometric training and my muscles are amazing and I just played great. But if you do plyometrics every single day of the week for 2 years or whatever, you're going to shatter your knees. So pragmatism for me, it was a bit like where I ended up on my PhD at the end, which was like this thing of why I like it is, you use philosophy and you use your own phenomenology, your own situations, your own experiences to make a best informed, well-informed choice about what works and how you might move on. And that helps you not get so stuck in certainties and ideas, because the moment that your situation changes or something comes in left field, whether that's absurd stuff or, you know, chance or luck, or something changes in the environment, like a different opponent comes along in sport, or your money situation changes, or you have a child, you know, and your world just goes this way, then you might have to think completely differently, or you have to rethink what you thought was true, because pragmatically now this is the best course of action based on your new situation. And you will never know the actual perfect way to go, but a pragmatic person tests and tries and is prepared to change their mind, and I like that about it. And it's not, I know that we'll cut to it later, but that's not full-on relativism, which is, oh, I'll just go with anything that works at the time. What you do, what a pragmatist does, a pragmatist takes from truth what it needs to take. You do take facts, you do take science. You know, it was born out of science in a way, you know, but it's more of a Charles Darwin evolutionary way you look at science. But even in evolution, chances and really strange things and miracles, random stuff happens. That's how evolution works. Things that you wouldn't think would happen, as you know, look at the beautiful animals and all the different ways life's gone. A lot of that was evolutionary chance and randomness. There is a truth to evolution. There is a truth to genetics and science. But what that does, it allows you to think, yeah, there are truths. I'll take from truth what I can take that's useful. So I'm not full relativistic. I'm not silly here. There are things that are true. But I have to apply that truth and not get bogged down in it. I can't get obsessed with the right one thing. I have to keep using what could be true, what probably is true, and adapting it based on what's coming up for me all the time. So it's a lot of work being a pragmatist. It's not as simple as rolling your sleeves up and just by driving into action. It still takes a lot of thinking and it takes research. But you know what you do, you're recognizing that you go through all these different phases. And to be pragmatic is to constantly be sort of saying, does this help? No, does help to do this though? Is this, the bottom line is, will it help me right now in my situation?
I know it was because it was truth that they end up falling out a little bit, don't they? So yeah. Charles Peirce is really the initial guy, the kind of the founder of pragmatism. I think William James credits him with that. And what I really like about his approach is that he does really have a window for truth. He's like, yeah, there is actually truth, but it comes in time. So it was almost this like continual process, like you said, of experimenting, inquiring, and then each time you get a little bit nearer to the truth in like capital letters. But that might happen over like centuries, where eventually everyone like goes, right, basically now we know this is basically the way it is around this. Whereas I think maybe William James and Dewey were a little bit less wedded to that. They were maybe a bit more relativist.
Yeah.
On that concept of truth. And then I know Peirce eventually, he starts a new field, doesn't he? Like, is it pragmaticism, where he's like, right, I'm sick of you two dickheads. I'm going off on my own now. This is like my separate thing and I'm going to make it sound dead complicated so it stands alone. But I wonder if that's why, because some people don't like, they're quite resistant to the idea of being pragmatic. They don't quite like it. And I wonder if it's because you've got to basically recognize that you as a human being, you are fallible. And like, you know, you might do something for certain and actually realize, oh yeah, I've gone down the wrong path there. I need to come backwards a bit and then do it this way. It's inbuilt into us as humans, isn't it? That there is no potentially one truth in the moment always. You've constantly got to keep working at it over time and you'll get closer to it. But you're always going to be fallible and you might make mistakes. And like, I think a lot of people need more certainty than that. They Absolutely. Need to think, no, there is truth. This is what the truth is.
Yeah.
And that gives me comfort and I feel safe and like, I feel confident enough to try something. Whereas pragmatism doesn't assume that, does it? It's like, no, in the moment, you've still got to have a go and see what happens and experiment and then adjust if it's not quite right.
I think it links to this, to the Sartre stuff and the existential stuff of responsibility as well. So in choice. So you can't switch off really if you're a pragmatist. And one of the things that I've found, this is one of the reasons that I wanted to personally do the episode is, and I've learned that why people have called me a pragmatic or I'm pragmatic, you know, in a way, is that you lay out the sort of cold truth of the situation, the simple, the objective kind of like, okay, you've lost that match. What are you going to do about it? What's going to make you better? And it's like instant. It's not like, oh, how are we going to improve? The famous book that came out in sport that was called Will It Make the Boat Go Faster? The Bridge of Spies film with Steven Spielberg, the main character, Adolf Abel or something, Rudolf Abel in there or something, you know, he was facing the death penalty and he was captured. And they were like, well, you're not worried. And he just kept saying, would it help? You know, would it help to worry then? No. Well, okay, well, I'm not then. You know, so that was like a cold, pragmatic kind of... Now, some people would say that's controlling the controllables and, you know, blah, blah, blah in psychology terms. But, you know, a pragmatic view is that. It's like, yeah, okay, we've lost. We've done what we're doing now. Or we've won. What are we doing now? Throw our medals away. We're going to start again. We're at the bottom, right? So a pragmatist... Now, what I do have sympathy and I do empathize with players and I'm not as hard pragmatic as I used to be. But what I get told a lot is I never tell people what to do. I just lay out the situation in front of them and it's very uncomfortable for a lot of people. So I will say, okay, so this is what I think you might need to do, but what are you actually going to do? so I can teach you this and I can teach you the way to hit it and I teach you the way to move and all of this, but you've still got to play that match on that day. How are you going to solve it? You're like, you've got to take part. You can't just learn this, this and this and like automatically win. You've got to still go and win that squash match. You've got to still go and play that person in that moment and solve those problems that are arising in that time. Golf, you know, an attitude in golf would be, you've got to get this white ball round the course in as least number of hits as possible. How are you going to do that today? And it makes people go, oh God, like, you know, that's a bit of too simple. Like that's, I didn't really want to own it that much. But for some people, that's a great approach because it simplifies it to a place where, yeah, I do only have to do that. It is a, you know, I heard Sean Dyche last week, didn't he? He was just like, one of the things I just said was, we've got to get the ball in that net and not get the ball, let the ball go in our net as much. And that's like a pragmatic, simple way of getting rid of all the stuff. And when you hear people say, oh, it's not rocket science, is it? It's probably because there's a sort of simple pragmatic line come in. But the trouble is, it is rocket science because it actually takes a lot of thought. You know, it's not as simple as, oh, you just do this and do this. It's like you've then gone into the too much of the pragmatism is a truth. Pragmatism is a constant process of confusion and working it out, and how you might get the white ball around the golf course one day isn't the same way you're going to get it around the course the day after when you're winning the tournament, or the weather's changed, or there's a bit of pressure on. You're in a different space because you've had a great round the day before. You shot a 62. Now you've got like that on your mind every time you're always in a different spot. So pragmatism is like, stay on your toes, keep working it out. And that's what it is for me. It's like real, you know.
That's maybe where sometimes, I wonder if some people use it as a bit of a cop-out as well, though.
Yeah.
So like the Dyche example there of like, we'll just do this, you know, stop them doing that and then we'll do this. It's pragmatic and it makes sense, but also sometimes is it a bit of a cop-out because you're ignoring some of the complexities of that are involved in you oversimplifying sometimes, because it's very much about taking responsibility and it's very much about action, isn't it? It's doing.
Yeah.
Which is good, but maybe there's certain things that actually, no, maybe you would benefit from a little bit of just ruminate on that a little bit first. Let's just try and rationalize this first before we dive in too quickly, like a bull at a gate. And there's maybe, you know, maybe we're missing something that we just need to have a, just hold horses for it, and then we'll just go. I wonder if it can be a cop-out for that, and it's like, oh, well, let's just dive in, and if we make a mistake, we'll learn from it. It's like, well, some mistakes can be fatal.
Yeah, and that's where experience is central to, for example, a pragmatic education. Pragmatic education isn't about learning facts and figures. It's about experience is king, really.
Yeah.
Experience is the really important part. Now, knowing when to come out with a pragmatic bottom line, like just get this round the course or just do this, takes someone who can synthesize information. It's not that someone at, you know, first time they've ever been on a golf course, just hit the ball there. You know, it might be just move that white thing somehow would be a better way of being pragmatic. Just move that white thing with that metal stick. Whereas when you've experienced and you're with a professional and they're nervous and they're going into a match, you know, a big tournament, it might say, you know how to get the ball around the course today. Get it around the course, you know, and keep just hit the green stuff. And that might be the right moment at the right time to say something so simply, so pragmatically. But the person who's saying it has to have perhaps been experienced themselves to say that so profoundly and so simply, because they can synthesize all the things that they've learned into something just like quite plain and pragmatic. So if I say to a player, you know, at the end of the day tonight, the player who's going to win is the player who basically wins the tee in squash, right? Or the person is going to be the person who keeps the ball in football. That's it. Well, you know, we know that that's not just it. But that, if you know your players well, you know that they can go, yeah, I know how to do that. I know how to keep the ball, and that's all I've got to remember. So saying pragmatic things is a funny thing. So a good example of that is, say you think of a parable, like say you pick the tortoise and the hare story. You know, a lot of parables are supposed to end up with a bit of wisdom in them, aren't they? So you go, oh, the tortoise and the hare had a race. The hare set off really fast. The tortoise took the time. The hare stopped, had a break, and the tortoise went past and won the race because they just plodded on and grinded it out. It's like a story about keep grinding, isn't it? And you'll get there. Then you've got the other parable, like say another different one of the guy who sharpens his saw. You know, they have who can cut the most logs.
He spends time sharpening his saw.
He sits there sharpening his saw, yeah. And in the end, he cuts the most logs while the muscle person gets tired. You know, so that's about patience and wisdom, isn't it? Well, at the end of the day, those parables work one day, and the next day they don't work. Yeah. Right? They're not bad parables. They make a point. And they're quite pragmatic. They're a bit like, so sit down, take your time, that's it. But like I said, they work on Wednesday, but they don't work on Saturday, you know, because you get situations where like people come along and they do sprint from the start and batter you. Like, you know, so next time you play them, it's no good saying that thing again. It's like, oh, right, well, how are we going to, we need to pick a parable where perhaps we're both fighting, we're both sprinting. Something that is about how do you overcome someone who's giving maximal effort and isn't going to quit? More be like David and Goliath or something, I don't know. So pragmatism is simple. It does get to a simple statement and a simple action, a conclusion that we're just going to do this. But you're kind of always aware that you're still in the process of experimentation. It's not certain that this is going to, but we best guess that this is the right thing to do. And then you take the action. So you don't get paralyzed going, oh, I don't know what to do. You hedge your bets, you consider everything, and then you go, right, we're doing it. And then that is the action side of being a pragmatist, that you're prepared to almost keep experimenting. But I think over time when you're pragmatic as a coach or as a teacher, you're almost expecting half of the learning to be done by them. So they have to bring that. They have to bring their thinking and problem solving skills and perceptions and abilities to be streetwise in their territory. You know, they're the ones playing the players who are playing. They're the youngsters. They're whatever. You know, we're just a coach. We're a teacher. We're on the outside. We teach kids nowadays, they're the ones living in this life now. We aren't supposed to make them perfect human beings and teach them. We've got to encourage them to go back into their worlds and be pragmatic with their evolving, current, ongoing situations. So yeah, we can give them some information and teach them about things. So philosophy itself, for me, why I like philosophy and what's been interesting with us is we have used philosophy pragmatically for our own purposes. We have got into all these different philosophers that we like and teach because in a way they soothe people for a while. So when you teach Camus, at the end of the day, you might disagree or agree with his ideas, but if it has a temporary effect of getting you through that day and making you feel better for a week, then pragmatically, learning about Camus has been useful. Pragmatically, getting into Zen Buddhism for a week is helpful. Frankl's will to meaning, you know, that can make you feel quite good. You can use will to power as a pragmatic tool to make you feel more energized and motivated. You know, you can pick and choose your philosophers in any given time of your life to pragmatically help you through that situation, as people do with church. You know, they'll say they don't believe in God. As soon as this tragedy's hit, they're at the hospital in the chapel, aren't they, praying to God because they don't want someone to die. So they're using it pragmatically to try and do something. And I just see that that's where philosophy itself and all the different philosophers can be utilized that way. And I don't think there's any shame in it. I know there's criticisms in that you're not being a true philosopher that's going to stick to your principles no matter what. But a pragmatist doesn't really care. A pragmatist sort of understands that the territory is constantly changing and you've just got to kind of do what you've got to do in that situation.
I agree with that. And I do. I like all the aspects of it. Probably my main issue with it is that I think it does take away some of that sense of wonder that you have with some of your more traditional philosophical thinking, because mm-hmm. it's so practical and it's so about in the lived experience in the moment. Mm. I still think that just that sense of awe and wonder about, fucking hell, what is it to be alive? What is going on? You know, what is the meaning of life? What's my purpose? I get it. The pragmatists are like, right, well, that's just too abstract. It's like, let's get into it and do some stuff. Let's not just talk about it.
Yeah.
But I do think there's still a lot of power in that philosophical aspect of just thinking for the sake of thinking. It doesn't always have to be about doing, even though we're massively about practical philosophy.
Yeah.
I still think that, I think that was one of the things with pragmatism, they were almost railing against philosophy as like a form of therapy almost. You know, some people use philosophy in that way, don't they? Where it is, it's quite therapeutic. And they were like, no, that's rubbish. Like, it's misguided. Reject that. Just get into it. It's all about in the moment. Let's do it. Let's practice. Let's have a go. Let's experience it and go from there rather than this in your head too much, perhaps. But I think it's a balance. With most things, it's a balance of both.
What was interesting, and this is sort of one take on it, is that the Americans, it's an American philosophy, yeah?
Yeah.
So all these philosophers, it's American. Now, so America got sort of modern America, you know, they almost treated America as a blank slate, even though we know it isn't. You know, they were like, no, it's ours now, what we're going to do. And in 200 years, look what they've done. They've basically built, so they built the country up from that. And obviously, intellectually, they were always looked down upon by the Europeans. So what I think Dewey and James had written a book as well about the call for an Americans to stand up and create their own philosophy.
Yeah.
So they had to basically stand up and say, right, well, you might all be talking about all these, you know, what is truth and what, you know, no concepts. Fine. European philosophy, which is what it's, you know, continental philosophy and all these things and different kinds. And you might be talking about that and you're doing all these things and they're there, but we're going to actually kind of like have our own as well. Not that I think they were slated more by the Europeans than they slated Europeans back. They were like, oh, that's so shallow. Oh, you know, we've been doing this, you know, we've got the greats, you know, we've got Hume and we've...
Bertrand Russell, who's like quite a famous British philosopher, he called it the metaphysics of the caveman.
Yeah, that's it.
And it's like really derogatory, like quite like dismissive of like, yeah, you're just like, you're beneath us, that's below us, like that level.
Yeah. And he did the Santa Claus example, didn't he? And said, oh, William James must have to believe in Santa because he believes that if it's real for you, it's true. So he wants to believe in Santa because he's got kids. But if he doesn't, if he believes in it too much, no one's going to buy his kids actual presents because he's forgot to buy them because Santa doesn't actually exist. So what's... And it was just like that. Pragmatist goes, see, there you go again, getting yourself all knotted up. They basically say... The Americans were sort of saying back, grow up, like grow up, get over all this sort of like concept creation and what is this and that, that you're kind of monopolizing people over by almost making it too mysterious. It's like, no, what works is what's important. And we're cracking on with that, no problem. We're not having a go at you lot, we're cracking on. And when you look at the way America went bang and shot up, you can't really criticize them because a lot of the policies then became, it's not what a man thinks, it's what a man does. So if you're a good neighbor and you're a good citizen and you build things and you're a plumber, you're a builder, you build a dam, you build a road, you build a city, you actually do stuff in that era. It's changed now with the finances, hasn't it? But if you actually do stuff, that's way more valuable than thinking about stuff. It does go back to talk doesn't cut grass, doesn't it? You know, they ended up seeing that philosophers got stuck up their own backsides, getting in knots in highbrow situations who could afford to sit around, you know, talking about this and that. Now, obviously, we've said that before. Philosophy really, in many ways, is just concept creation, just making up concepts, arguing about ideas, intellectual challenges, who can out-intellectualise each other and top-trump each other, and probably the status stuff from the last episode came into a lot of that. Whereas I think the pragmatists were quite good because they kind of made it a bit more of a daily everyman thing where it's like, yeah, I think this, think that, but at the end of the day, what are you producing? How's it affect? Is it making your life better? Is it serving good for other people? Is it doing yourself good? And if it is, then well done. You know, that's the ultimate thing here. We have to get on. Like I said, you know, talking doesn't cook rice. You know, so get yourself into stuff. Now, what I think happens with that is what's dangerous is that if you see yourself as some deep thinker or you see yourself as some person who's a bit higher than everybody else who's got the world sussed, when you actually face real practical things that come along your way, very hard for your ego to deviate from those beliefs, even if it means shooting yourself in the foot or cutting your nose off to spite your face. So if you're like, well, I'd never work for a bank, or I'd never kill an animal no matter what, and, you know, and I'd never, you know, I'd never join this group of people because, but then, you know, life changes, war happens, or, you know, you need money or something goes on and it's pretty, you could pretty, pretty much down Maslow's needs, you know, you need shelter, food and warmth. And it's like, oh yeah. So a pragmatist would say, like, we're not bothered, but you can change your mind if you want. If you do need to eat and earn money, do that. If you do need to just, you know, in football, if you need to lump the ball up the pitch, or you just need to whack this golf drive, or you just need to get stuck into somebody and forget about all the fancy stuff, just because you've been talking about the beautiful game, don't worry about it. For the last 10 minutes, just do it. That's a pragmatist. A pragmatist wouldn't be frightened to change the mind because they're so hung up on the status of ideas. So I like that about it, because I think it makes you a bit less idealistic and utilitarian a little bit. It's not utilitarian, utopian in your little perfect view of why the world's right, why the world's wrong, what people should do, why everyone else is a bit of an idiot and you're actually fine. For me, you have a little bit more empathy for people, like, well, if they're in that situation doing that, there must be a reason. And it's sometimes better to work out, well, how could we help them in a different way with that so that they don't come and attack me? Or how could we understand them where they're coming from practically, rather than just calling them the worst people on the planet, you know, or whatever. And that could be small scale or high scale. So rather than getting frustrated at your enemy, find out where they're coming from would be a pragmatic understanding of it, than just flat out going, they're just totally wrong, they don't get it.
I think that brings us back nicely to this idea of truth. And I think this is when I mentioned Bertrand Russell before.
Yeah.
He was basically saying, look, no, there are just some undisputable facts that exist. There are certain truths that are just truths. And this pragmatic idea of, well, yeah, there might be truth, but there's what's true for me now in this moment, at this exact, you know, point in time. And Russell, and I think we're seeing this playing out with a lot of modern arguments that you say, he was like, well, if you as a pragmatist, your world and your experience tells you that the world is flat, but we know it's not. And it's like, your world and your experience tells you that the sun goes round the earth, but we know it's not. Like, factually, those views are incorrect. And if you'd have carried on with those beliefs, you were missing out on a hell of a lot of opportunities. So if you just saw the earth as flat, you know, there was loads of stuff that you would have made loads of mistakes, and there was loads of things that you wouldn't have done because you didn't think it was possible. So it does bring it back to that real, that's the core of the pros and cons, I suppose. It's like, are there things that are genuinely independent from our experience of them that are just true, whether you like it or not? And you have to incorporate them into your thinking. You can't just have this.
Well, that's it. You've just said the point. So the general argument is truth versus, at the time it was truth versus pragmatism, but actually it turned out that it was truth versus relativism. The pragmatist was saying all along, no, I never would say that the earth was flat, because it wouldn't serve me in any positive way to believe the earth was flat.
No, but what I mean is their experience would tell them that the world is flat. Through your experience, you can't really experience it as anything other than flat.
Yeah.
Through your senses and through your perception of the world.
A pragmatist would hear that, go to the scientist, and the scientist say, look at this. And they go, oh yeah, and change the mind like that. Whereas a relativist would carry on going, no, well, I don't care, because to me, the world's flat. It doesn't matter what you say. A pragmatist would adapt straight away and listen to the science. So a true pragmatist takes in the science. That's the Charles Darwin part. This is where pragmatism gets a bad name, because it's like shaded over to full-on relativism. And it isn't. I'm not a relativist by any stretch. I'm not just, there's no truth to how you hit a squash ball. There's no biomechanics in sport. There's no gravity. You know, there's no science. It's like, no, there are. You lift them weights, your muscles get bigger. It works. Eat protein. This happens. You know what I mean? No, it's not, hey, eat what you want. So it's all relative to me. I've always had bamboo and I'm fine. You know, it's like, no, there are actual scientific proofs that you always have to look at the science. So a pragmatist would never dismiss the science and the actual hard truths, but they don't obsess about the whole truth. They take from truth what they need to turn it then into something practical. And that's the evolutionary part of flukes do happen in evolution and randomness. So a pragmatist keeps on with experimenting and deviating from bits of truths and adding little sprinkles and, oh, that's not how you make a coffee, you know, a scientific way of making it taste the best. As a pragmatist, well, how about I just chuck some banana in it? I don't know. Oh, awful. Oh, I might chuck some apple. Well, I might chuck some cream in first. It's like, no, that's not how you do it. Well, actually, happy accident. But wouldn't be full relativistic going, you should never tell me how to make a coffee. It's down to how I like it. Thank you very much. And that's the difference. So there is a, you can go and there's a whole lot, another sort of probably episode and things about how pragmatism is very different from relativism.
Well, that's what you mentioned, I think, Richard Rorty earlier, didn't you? He took it on a bit from James and then Dewey. He came a little bit later, and I think some of the criticism he got was, for example, it was things like, we seem to talk about the Nazis quite a lot on this, we always use it as example.
You do.
But that came as in his example. It was like Richard Rorty, I'm sure, said something like, well, you know, in Nazi Germany, that was being pragmatic. You know, it was like, you can basically explain that away through a pragmatic lens, which I suppose it's moving it more towards relativism, isn't it? It's like, well, you don't know unless you were there and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But I quite liked one of his quotes where he's talking about that aspect of it. It's like, well, who you're with in the moment determines if it's pragmatic or not.
Yeah.
For that, it could have been. But he says, truth is simply what the people you are speaking with will let you get away with saying. Truth is what your conversation partners will all nod yes to when you say it.
Yeah.
And it is, isn't it, in that pragmatic sense, what you can get away with in the moment. It can be a million miles away from objective actual truth, but if it works for you in that moment, it's pragmatic.
Absolutely. Like, you can't go back to the cave people, can you, and say, oh, you shouldn't have been banging your rocks like that. You should have been doing them like this. Because they didn't know at the time. They only had what they had available to them. And in some cases, probably better skills, you know, raw manpower, I don't know, more energetic people. But this was Heidegger's thrownness as well, wasn't it? You're of your time. So a pragmatic view as well, is it what Rorty was saying? We branched off a bit and has had a lot of criticism.
I think he's known as a neo-pragmatist. So there's like a... There's a twist to it. It's probably not what like a William James and Dewey and that,
no,
especially like Peirce, would have agreed with. I think they would have had disagreement.
Yeah, and we don't. Me and you don't really know. We're not into like philosophy, are we? We're like, as in, we're not. We don't study philosophers and their lives and all the books they wrote and all that. We just know. We're just talking about some of the ideas, aren't we?
Yeah.
But I know that I did like the idea that he was like, you've got to be of your time a little bit as well. And that's what I was saying about, like, with children now and you're coaching kids, I don't understand a lot of them. Why would I, you know, with these mobile phones and these apps and how they get attention and how status is affected and how it is to be a child living now. If you're not careful, you end up thinking the only possible good time to ever exist was when I was a teenager, you know, and it's like, well, no, maybe there's teenagers now having the best time ever and they'll look back at that. And maybe there's a philosophy for a time and a place that you're in, and that's pragmatic. So he brought that in as well. Like, given the resources, given the moment, given it was, you know, this era, this was what was in the air, you know, this was the sort of social norms. Pragmatically, this is what you did. It's what everybody did and accepted at the time. We see that with language now, don't we? They're censoring all the 80s comedy shows because you can't have it anymore. But at the time, no one even noticed. It was just the way it was. From now, you'd go, well, that was terrible. But at the actual time, you were being pragmatic with things that were within the limits there, in a way.
But it comes back to truth, doesn't it? I suppose it's like, is there such a thing as just like true objective morality? As an example, are there just certain moral things that are true no matter what of the time? It doesn't matter. That's just bad.
Yeah.
Do that to someone or say that or whatever.
And that's where they go back off. You would then go back off down back into the realms of what are the rights of a human being? When every human being is born, what are their immediate, God-given, whatever, you know, birth rights? You know, don't get treated badly, don't get picked on, don't get killed. And then you're off down that again, you know, that massive, well, it could be this, could be that, could be this. What is a truth? And that's the correspondence theory of truth. Somewhere on some planet, there is a rock that has the statement, the Ten Commandments, that will tell us, finally, what the actual truth was, how a human being should be treated. And a pragmatic goes that we could never find that, so we can only deal with what we have at the time and act accordingly. So let's not even go down that idealistic rat hole. But other philosophers would say, no, it's worth the conversation, because even though we don't get to that absolute truth, we get closer to it. And again, I don't think pragmatism was really attacking anything else. It was just saying, whilst you're doing that, I'm getting on with my current situation and acting on it now whilst you're having a debate. So I suppose I would think overall you need both types of thinkers and all sorts. But personally, I'm very in that. Now, just to finish, for me, like a pragmatic education, like we're teachers. One of the things I found that if you were going to be like a pragmatic educationalist, sort of a few things about that, where you would teach students and you were coaching or you were working with staff or whatever, that you would have a belief that the facts can change. Okay, so at any moment, you know, facts and certain facts about the situation, about the territory you're in, can change. Pragmatists are generally utilitarian. So you would be like, you've got to have a utility. What you're learning about actually has to have a utility.
Yeah.
It's like, right, I'm teaching you this today so that tonight you can go and do that. And that's another sign for me that I'm quite pragmatic. I used to go off syllabus so much because I was like, you're not going to need to know this. But if I can get you to get some utility out of what I'm teaching you this weekend or at work or with your family or with your boyfriend or with your partner, then you're going to buy into learning this topic, you know. The other thing is that experience is king. So you have to throw people back into experiences. You know, if you want them to really learn something, try and give them the experiences of it. So you do, you know, lots of practicals, get people active for work placement, blah, 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 all that stuff. That thoughts and actions are interconnected. There's an intertwining of the subjectivity of your own phenomenology, your own world going on, your own experience. There's an interactive between, you know, that you looking out from inside the fishbowl out into the world. There's an interactive between that and actual truth. So even though that there are true facts, you know, like we were saying earlier, there's still a strange blend going on. Every person kind of makes that thing their own in a way that you experience it as your own kind of, you know, some people are scared by heights. Some people love being high up, you know, but it's true that if you fall from a height, you're probably going to die without a parachute, you know. So that's the fact. Gravity will take you down. But you might go, oh, I love that thrill up there, feeling like you could. And I just can't even, I just freeze. I just can't stand it. So there's an intertwining going on. Even though there are facts, they've still got a personal sort of interpretation and feeling around what those things. That we are humans as social as well. So again, like I said earlier, when you're teaching people, it's not just the bottom line for them and how it affects them, it's how it also might affect the teammates or the peer group or the family or the people in their society who live on their street, or even the human race as a whole. So that, you know, a pragmatism involves not just totally thinking of the selfish bottom line for me. Pragmatism also involves thinking about, but is this good for more people than me? Because ultimately you're going to need people, you know, as that was particularly John Dewey's view of pragmatism and society, really.
He wrote a lot of good stuff about education, didn't he? That was probably his probably best known for, I would say, with a lot of people. You know, that approach to education through a pragmatic lens, I'm definitely on board with a lot of that stuff. I think that's probably, for me, the biggest message. So we've talked about truth and facts and things, but as a general ethos, a lot of what the pragmatists were getting at, they were just big skeptics of certainty, weren't they? That was their main thing. It's like, it's back to the famous it depends stuff. That was really what they were getting at. I was like, you know, don't ever be too certain about things. Yeah, things like gravity, and, you know, like we said about the earth being flat and things like that, they're big level things. They're not really relevant to us in what we're doing. But as an educator, as just people in a complex world now, you should be really, really skeptical of, you know, they're having like a real certain outlook on something, and be really skeptical of people who try and sell you those really certain messages of like, this is the way, it only works this way.
Yeah,
follow me and it'll work for you too. That's like the pragmatists were like, no, we're not having that. And that's probably my favorite quote from it was William James. Really dead simple, truth is what works.
Yeah.
So for us, 99% of our day, you know, take gravity and things out of it, like I say, it's like, well, what's going to work for you now in this moment? Then that's true enough. It's like true enough, and it doesn't have to be the all seeing, all dancing true, but it's like, what's true enough for you now to achieve whatever outcome you're looking to get? I really take that from these boys.
When I hear people slagging off in sports, they'll slag off drills, or they'll slag off technique coaching, or they'll slag off gyms, or does, you know what I mean? They get it in the bottom. Yeah. That's wrong. That's wrong. I'm like, how could you when you're pragmatic, you don't even think that anything's wrong because you're like, I don't know. There could be someone in Iceland doing that 25 hours a day and the week and it works for them. I think a pragmatist stays relaxed a little bit about potential ways and ideas, and in some ways then never gets too surprised or isn't too inflexible. You know, you can stick to things, but you don't get stuck to an idea, and then you can change and you're not too embarrassed to change. You've not entrenched yourself into an ideology or a belief that you've nailed it to the mast and it's your whole business. And you actually, I used to think that, but you know, you can't reverse once you've committed too hard. So a pragmatist doesn't fall into those traps, I believe. And that's where I think experience comes in. Yeah. So when I was growing up doing all the coaching and I was actually in the world with skin in the game, you know, with my wife, I were like jumping onto new ideas and reading books and idealistic ideas and 10 ways to do this, 4 ways to do that, reading all the research. And then I were like, yeah, but does it work? And then it would work Tuesday, wouldn't work Friday. Then it would work one season, useless the next season. So you start to go, before you go diving into things as these promises and answers, it's not that you're skeptical of people. You're just going around being like a clever skeptic. You're open-minded. You've not got so skeptical you won't try any new book, or you always got a bit of optimism. That it's just right. If I do find an idea, it still needs applying. And I think that your thoughts are affected by your actions, and your actions are affected by your thoughts. So like, the more you get out and experience things and do things and get out of your armchair, the more that helps the way you think. But if you're just constantly too much in action and you don't sit down in your armchair and work things out sometimes and ponder and reflect and go for walks, then you know that's not going to be the best either. It's not easy being a pragmatist. It's like a constant kind of working out, experimenting mind. And I think that's what's difficult for people when they get tired. I think they just want to know what to do. And as a pragmatic coach, when I sense that in a player, I'll just give them instructions that day.
Yeah.
We're like, you're not working out for you today, pal. You've been, just do that. I'm in charge. Do that. So someone will go, oh, you should never do that. That you should always be player led. And you're like, no, not today. Shut your mouth. I'm just telling them what to do because they've just had 3 weeks of working stuff out and they're battered. So again, it's all, you're always open.
And for me, it all goes back to we did an episode on it, didn't we? The bioenergetics episode. Right. I think you're going to be more likely to be able to be pragmatic when all those energy systems are on point.
That's a great point.
And I think it's like the opposite. If if that baseline's not where it needs to be, then the chances of you being pragmatic are pretty non-existent. It's like, do you know what? No, I am craving certainty. I am just craving some answers and someone just giving me something to do. And I'm not going to learn anything from it. I'm just going to do it. I'm just going to be like a robot. It's all intertwined, isn't it? All this big picture.
It's hard and stress. If you're stressed and busy, hyper busy, your pragmatic abilities go down. You just probably, well, maybe, who knows, maybe you just go to survival mode and maybe that is being pragmatic, you know, and sort of just after down tools and switch off. Because like, I've got 2 jobs, 4 kids, or I can't be that person at the moment.
Yeah. But it's conscious. At least that's a conscious, I am now going to be pragmatic in this way and do it. It's not just an instinctive animal reaction to the stress and the stuff that's on you, and just like, you just collapse underneath it.
Yeah, I used to get really down on nihilists. I was like, oh, negative people, terrible, you know, life's for living and blah, blah, blah. But I tell you what, if nihilism serves you now and again, you know, just to be fed up and down about the human race and the future and everything, because, you know, whatever it weirdly kind of helps you for a few days, crack on. You don't have to bring everybody else down, you know. But no, it's true, isn't it? But my view always used to be that I'd never be like that. But who's to say that if it works and it helps the people, as long as they don't get stuck in nihilism forever and it becomes like a motto, then, you know, again, you're always open-minded.
There we go. We're back to sunny nihilism.
Yeah.
Go and listen to that episode if you've not listened to it.
Yeah.
When we dance, the journey itself is the point. When we play music, you will simply become completely absorbed in sound. And therefore you will find yourself living in an eternal now in which there is no past, and there is no future, and there is no thing called difference between yourself and the world of nature outside you. This is red. This is green. This is something. This is nothing. This is solid. This is space. Between yourself and the world of nature outside you.